Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving. Living and Thriving. Living and Thriving with Rusty. Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. It's Living and Thriving time. Yes, again, 2 days in a row. How exciting is that? Yesterday, my friends Maury and I had a time zone challenge. Her time zone is different than my time zone, and so we missed each other. So today we rescheduled to have a really awesome conversation about motivating yourself and empowering yourself. And you know, this is kind of a strange time we're in, where every day we're not really quite sure what's going to happen next. And even though I really believe that we are just a leaf floating in the gargantuan ocean of infinite possibilities, and to be positive about that, not everybody feels comfortable floating on a leaf in an unknowing world. And what Living and Thriving tries to do is to inspire you, motivate you, get you excited, make you feel at home. I want you to know you're all in my living room, and it's lovely, and it's so beautiful out, and I'm glad you're here. My hopes and prayers for you is that you get to dance in your kitchen and sing at the top of your lungs, or maybe go finger paint or buy somebody a cup of coffee. Keep your 6 feet, though. You know, go out and do something. Take a walk. Make a joke with your kid. Like we do here in this house, we make up different holidays and do silly things just because life is to be lived, even if it's in these confined times. Call your friends, text your friends, send dirty jokes, you know, make people laugh. Laugh yourself, love yourself, take a nice hot bath. All these wonderful things you can do. You have that access to do them. Don't drive yourself crazy feeling cooped up, bored, and lonely. Let's motivate. Let's move. Call me. My calendar is up and ready, and I'm taking 15-minute free calls. Just call me. Let's chat. I'm here all day. I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to learn more about you, and I'd love to laugh with you. So look on my website for that. Tamara, I know you're out there. I know. Girl, are you there?
I am.
Knock, knock. How are you? Good morning.
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
You know, I'm living the high life, girl. I'm up, I'm mischievous, I'm ornery, and my piss and vinegar level is on high. So, yep, I'm having fun.
There you go.
So why don't you tell us who you are, what you do, and what inspires you to be you?
Absolutely. So I am a professional motivational speaker, an author. I'm a small business coach, and I coach individuals on the benefits of public speaking and communication, and it's kind of become my mission to try to empower and motivate as many people as possible to not just live your best life, but to seek out your best life and make sure that you're going at it full steam ahead. So that's what I do.
All right, and where can we find you?
Let's see. I'm located in Vacaville, California. I can always be contacted on my website, www.TLeanneSpeaks.com, as well as I'm on Facebook under T. Leanne Speaking Pros, LLC. So, my telephone number is 707-394-4367. So I'm available for coaching, public speaking, assistance, empowerment. I do keynote addresses for domestic violence. So I'm well-rounded there.
Well, and that's what intrigued me about you, because I, too, you know, spend a lot of my time doing keynotes for domestic violence, and it's a very tough topic. And what I find, at least in my experience, is that not a lot of people want to go there. Not a lot of people want to touch that iron, so to speak. Do you find it difficult to find an audience that's willing to have that conversation?
Well, not necessarily. Usually when I get called to do a domestic violence keynote address, it's already something that's pre-set up. But I approach mine very different. So when I go to speak to women who have been victims, as I myself have, I go with the mantra of moving forward, because I explain to them, mm-hmm. I can come in here and we can lick our wounds and we can cry about everything that happened and not knowing why it happened, but I want you to say, okay, it's happened. What do we do now? How do we prevent this from happening again? How do we see the signs? How do we make sure that we are not domestic violence survivors, but domestic violence conquerors, and that life has a whole new agenda? So that's how I approach it.
Well, and I think that's a perfect segue into the way of the world now, because life does have its own agenda, and we don't have control as much as we try, like how to control every aspect and to, you know, build this fantasy world. Sometimes big curveballs are thrown at us, and I think aside from what's going on in the world, day-to-day life, we do have curveballs in various parts of our existence on the planet. What are your 5 steps to overcoming kind of that fear-based stuff and finding the positives?
I think for me, definitely, and what I would encourage anyone is the first thing has to be whatever your faith-based belief is. Going through trauma that I went through, I prayed a lot, and I prayed for levels of sanity. I pray to get me past the situation, to help me see the end of the tunnel, because it was so much turmoil. So I think definitely whatever your faith belief is, having the confidence and the faith in that you'll be brought out of it. Having a plan for yourself. I found that after the end of my trauma, I really didn't have a plan anymore. And so that was one of my biggest downfalls. So after I devoted so much of my life to someone and something else, and it crumbled as it was only going to do, because it started bad, so it only could end bad, then what am I going to do now? What is my plan? So although, as we see, there are different polarities and life changes, it's still important to have other options in your head in the event of, because living day by day doesn't guarantee you anything but almost definite failure. So you have to have different options for yourself. I had, number 3, I would say definitely support people who are in your corner. I have a supportive family and friends who see you at your lowest but know you have potential to be at your greatest at some point, and continuously encouraging you to move and forge ahead and to not stay in the place where there is no benefit to your success or your growth, definitely. I would absolutely say also, and this is probably kind of a little off, but not so, making sure that you financially have a plan. When calamity happens, even that we're dealing right now with the COVID-19, we're finding that a lot of people did not have a financial backup plan. And so when something happens, now your whole world has fallen apart. So making sure that you set something aside, and being in a domestic violence situation, and a lot of times speaking on behalf of women, women have allowed men to be in charge of the finances. So when that falls apart, what do you do when you no longer have finances? And that's one of the things I speak about to women about in my keynote addresses, that having yourself in a financial place of security alone, and that should be okay for your spouse, and encourage them to do the same thing. And I think last but not least, always having confidence and love of self. Without that, nothing else can have any purpose and could not even happen. But knowing that you were made in God's image and you were created to live your best life, not to be at the heel of someone's boot, but to live out your full potential, and having those things in place, it doesn't mean calamity won't befall you, but it definitely means you'll be able to get up all the more quicker, and you'll be able to put yourself back on the straight and narrow even that much faster.
Well, and I love the reminders of self-love and self-importance. But larger, I am a tax preparer as well as a notary, and I live in God's waiting room. So I do a lot of wills and a lot of living directives and things like that. And several of my clients, tax clients, are older women who have never written a check. They've never paid bills. They don't even know about oil changes. There's no, because he always took care of that, but he passed. And they're sitting there in their living room going, I don't know how to do this. And that's a different generation and a different time frame. But for people to be aware that you need to learn how to do these things, you need to be able to be self-sufficient and that it's okay. It's not taking away from gender identity. It's preparing yourself just in case something happens. And beyond domestic violence, I mean, I had to go and dig up my living will because it's just me and my daughter. So I need to make sure that if anything happens to me, he's taken care of and all of his contact numbers are correct and you know, that sort of thing. But that's just kind of the way we're living right now. And it's not to scare anybody. It's just to prepare everybody.
Absolutely. And not only that, but in order to really be a person that's in control of themselves, you never give up all control to anyone. And it doesn't have to be, as you stated, a domestic violence situation or a violent situation at all. But in order for you to truly be empowered, empowered means to be in control of oneself. It means to have the ability to. And if you don't know the basic essentials, I know I have a friend of mine who's married and has no idea what mortgage company their house belongs to. And that, to me, is beyond crazy. If something happens, you have no idea how to continue going because your husband handles all those things. Now, that's great. And if you guys are in a traditional relationship and he believes he should handle all the bills, that's wonderful. But in the event that something happens, you know where nothing is, you don't know what to do, you don't know how much money there is in the bank, and you'll find yourself at a homeless shelter wondering how this happened when you were just living your best life a year ago with your husband. Things happen all the time that we have no control over. But we can have control over how we allow it to affect us. And being prepared for the inevitable is essential in life, especially for women. Not taking away from men, but especially for women, we often get the short end of the stick. So it's important that we have a backup plan to our own lives. Doesn't mean that the first plan doesn't work, but just in case, because you never know.
Yeah, and right now with this pandemic, I think it's really an eye-opener for individuals to have long-term planning. And again, not fear-based, but more shit happens. And sometimes really big ones happen. And, you know, how do we prepare ourselves? And if you don't have that skill set, I can guarantee somebody on YouTube can show you how to write out a check.
That's right.
You know, somebody on Twitter can help you figure out mortgage companies. And, you know, so you can use this time that we are kind of hunkered down a little bit to call people like Tamara or myself or go to Google or YouTube or some of these places where you can kind of empower yourself and become more aware and prepared for, say, a 30-day lockdown. You know, the states might go into a 30-day lockdown. We don't know what's going to happen, but we need to make sure that our finances and our priorities are all set up and straightened out and be empowered by that and feel strong and good about that process.
Absolutely. I agree with you completely. And if you think about it, when calamity hits us or we have some type of emergency that happens or something of that nature, if your spouse is the only one handling everything and you know nothing that's going on, does that take away pressure or add pressure to them at a time where they're reeling? And I think it's important for us to be as much of a compliment to each other as possible. And you can't do that if you're solely reliant upon another person.
Teamwork, baby, teamwork. So one thing that I find really exciting, as you know, I love to talk. But larger than that, I like to get people excited about their day-to-day. And I want to kind of segue into your book, 10 Steps to Becoming a Highly Effective Public Speaker. So what's a public speaker? How do you even become one? And is everybody good at it?
You know, I wrote that book because I have a complete love and adoration for public speaking. I love the English language. I've always had a fondness for grammar. And public speaking to me is natural. I tell people all the time that I came out of the womb talking. So for me, it's natural. Some people, it's their biggest fear, and I respect that. So when I do a seminar or I do a conference on it, what I want people to know is that public speaking is not just for public speaking. It's for better communication skills. By learning the art of public speaking, you never have to be a public speaker, but it can help you with your confidence. It can help you to articulate words better, to broaden your vocabulary. Those are a lot of the benefits of public speaking. And once you're able to really grasp that, then it's kind of like a whole new world opens up to you. I honestly believe anybody can be a public speaker because it's something that doesn't require rocket science, but it does require an appreciation and a desire to be a better communicator. And from someone who speaks a lot and speaks in a variety of different audiences, I wanted people to know the steps that I use to be successful at it. And in my book, I get right to the skinny of it. I don't spend a lot of fluff time. I get right to what steps 1 through 10 are based on time management, demographics, making sure that you're speaking to the audience that best matches your message, right down to just tips on how to be a better speaker, even if it's one-on-one. And in this day and age, for me, eye contact is very important. I look people in their eyes when I talk to them. There are people that are uncomfortable with that. So I tell people find a place in the room that's adjacent to that individual's eyes that they don't know you're not looking at them and they wouldn't know, and you'll get the same effect. They think that you're giving them one-on-one. You're not necessarily, but it doesn't take away the value from the communication and the message that you're giving them. So anyone can be a public speaker, but everyone should want to be a better communicator, definitely.
Well, and I love that because it's true. I think the more you write, the more you speak, the more you have conversations, and the more you try to articulate your inner cosmos, it is really helpful to look at communication as a priority, especially now that we're so isolated from each other. You know, it's not as though we can have that face-to-face contact as easily. And I think Scrabble and word puzzles are an excellent way to up your vocabulary. I think that's a great way to do it. What other kinds of tools or tricks would you have for just vocabulary?
You know, when I was younger, I used to watch my mom, how she communicated. She spoke so proper, and she was so eloquent and so classy. And so that's how I first started getting into my love of grammar. I used to watch how she communicated and how she was confident and comfortable speaking to anyone. So what I did, probably a little bit archaic, but I used to go into the dictionary and I'd look for words that I could properly pronounce and I'd look for the definition. And then from there I would incorporate that into different sentences and I'd try to make sure that every word that I found, I used it in a conversation. I would listen to other people communicate and I'd write down words that I didn't know. I looked those words up, and I made it my mission to always use those words and sentences. It's also who you surround yourself with, kind of segueing away, but not. If you are surrounded around individuals where communication, education, becoming better people is a part of their agenda, then you will learn different facets of vocabulary. Also, surrounding yourself with a multitude of cultures. You cannot grow if you stay in one box around one group of people all the time. You have to broaden your horizon because so many people have different levels of education and things that they can offer and bring to you. So really broadening your vocabulary also has to do with who you surround yourself with. And I made sure that I surrounded myself with individuals that look different, had different experiences, and I was able to take something from those relationships and grow. You never want to be boxed in because that limits you. And believe it or not, vocabulary has a lot to do with being successful in your career, how you communicate with executives, the level of confidence that you're going to have, that you understand how they're disseminating information. All those things are important. So never limit yourself on broadening your horizons at all.
Well, what's exciting about that, and I knew I absolutely loved you.
But what's exciting about that is I feel the same freaking way. You've got to travel. You've got to go out. You've got to experience what life has to offer in order to increase your mind space. You don't know what you don't know until you know. And when you get out there and you learn, you're like, holy cow, I didn't know that. Whoa. And that expression, that emotion, that feeling, that understanding, whether you like that feeling or not, it's still a tool of education. And it still provides you power in your mind space to expand, right?
Right. Absolutely. And that's important.
Now, oh, 100%, because I feel like, honestly, you know, I grew up in the South. I grew up with my mother's Cherokee Indian, and there's a lot of racism down here. I mean, there's racism everywhere, but when I was growing up, it was really bad here in the South. And I never understood it. I couldn't relate because I grew up with regular everyday people that, they didn't always look like me, but, you know, growing up in Miami, it's very multicultural. So the perception that there was something unusual or different about these people or about me, I've never been able to relate to that. And so I made it my quest when I raised my children to ensure that they go everywhere that we possibly can so that they have exposure and experience and understanding and compassion, and there's no question as to one is better than the other or any kind of bullshit that we've tried to have fed into our minds. And it blows my mind when I run into people who genuinely feel anxiety or angst or some form of prejudice against somebody else, but they've never actually traveled. They've never experienced those people outside of the community talk, as I call it, within their family and their environment. And I think if people were mandatory, made to travel, made to experience, I think we would have a lot less hate, a lot less domestic violence, a lot less child abuse. And quite frankly, I think it would just be a better place.
Absolutely, I agree. Definitely.
All right. So we are back online here at Living and Thriving, and I'm talking to Tamara, and she's just fantastic. She talks about mental health and women's empowerment, civil rights, domestic violence. She has a book out called 10 Steps to Becoming a Highly Effective Public Speaker, and we're just kind of chatting away about life and, you know, what it means to stand up and stand your ground. And I'm all about reinventing yourself. I believe that that's a process that everyone must go through. Tamara, talk to me about what your version of reinventing yourself. What does that look like to you?
Well, you know, it's crazy because I mapped out a life for myself, totally drama-free life. I'm pretty sure I did. And then I got married. And the person that I married didn't tell me that he was a drug addict, didn't tell me. He hid it well, and since I wasn't familiar with that, I didn't know what it looked like. And so then we found out a few months after that that he was also bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. So then I went from being someone who's traveled all around the world. I previously had two children from my first marriage, and living a very content life to now having someone who I did not know only lives in chaos. And drama. So my kids had never heard me and their dad argue ever. It just was not that type of life. But now you're dealing with someone and trying to prevent them from going out and getting drugs, trying to prevent them from being sexually promiscuous every 6 seconds of the day. And so your life takes a very shifted change. And being someone that grew up to believe that marriage was the pinnacle, and that you are to have honor for the whole institution of it, and that, you know, your marriage is a three-chord. It's you, your spouse, and God. And so I took it very serious, and I wanted to be able to help him pass those traumas that he had been dealing with. And he totally took that opportunity to try to shred my life into pieces for me and my kids. And I didn't understand until much later when I started training with NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, why that might be and how he was and why he was reacting the way he did. But by then, I had committed my life to his mental health treatment, to his drug rehabilitation, which in the medical field they call dual diagnosis. I'm going to treatments with him 7 days a week. I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous for the support with his sobriety. I'm forgetting about me. I don't even exist in the equation. I'm not sleeping. Now I'm starting to deal with forms of my own mental illness because I'm starting to have anxiety coming into play. But when it was all said and done, and I decided to go ahead and file for divorce because that life of chaos, he had been doing it for so long that the small time with me wasn't going to matter, and I had some children that I had to put in front of it. The marriage is over, and I'm like, well, what do I do now? I mean, this is what I had been doing. I've pretty much been a caregiver. I was a wife. I don't know what to do now. So what I did was, one of the first things I did was I sought out therapy for myself. I think therapy is essential for anyone and everyone. And as I stated before, I was dealing with anxiety. I was also dealing with levels of depression, and from the domestic violence in the relationship, a lot of verbal, mental abuse, just a lot of aggression and the things that came with that, I had levels of PTSD. So now I came into the marriage not having any of these issues, but I'm leaving far more tarnished than I had come into it. And so now I'm trying to navigate that and figure out what am I going to do. So I started writing the book 10 Steps because I knew I'd been doing public speaking prior to being with him. It was something I was great at. But now it was about how do I help somebody who might be dealing with something similar to me but don't know that there is a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, not legitimate gold, not, you know, literal gold, but definitely there can be a better life. So I started working on me, and I went to therapy on a regular basis and started getting me back on track. And so that's how I started First Steps to Reinventing Myself, definitely.
I love that. I am. My marriage is extremely abusive and very toxic. And even to this day, we've been divorced 10 years, and he still tries to use our daughter as a weapon for warfare. It's just, it's so exhausting mentally. But 5 years before I finally left him, I knew that I was leaving him, and I wanted to make a strategic plan for the kids so that they were safe. But one of the things that I realized that I had to do was to really look deeply inside myself and figure out what it was I wanted out of the relationship, why I stayed for so long, and what am I as an individual. And that was very, very hard. It was very hard to admit my wrongs and look at myself and say, okay, who am I actually? Because I had lost, like you, so much of who I was as an individual. And I forgot the things that I love to do. I forgot to love myself. I forgot to take care of myself. I forgot to just even care about me as a being on this planet. And that transformation took some time, but it's kind of neat to get to know who you are now separate from that trauma, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think one of the things that helped me to be able to move on in a positive way is similar to you, I knew the marriage was over before because the abuse was accelerating, and he came from a traumatic family where there was nothing but drug abuse and trauma, and, you know, it was just a lot of unfortunate situations within his family, and had I met them prior, I would have never married him because that would have given me the roadmap to what I was going to deal with. But having had not done that, I knew we were going to be ending. It wasn't until he brought a woman into our marital arrangement. He had an affair with the mental health worker at one of the facilities and was having sex with her at the facility.
And oh my God.
Yeah, unfortunate. And so what I knew from that betrayal was hard for me. It wasn't so the marriage or that I loved him so much I couldn't lose him and, oh, my God, what would I do? It was I'm a very loyal person. And when he did that, that was my pride was moved. And it was a form of betrayal that I was having a problem with, which kind of allowed me to stay in a place of turmoil a little bit longer. But one thing that helped me to be able to move past him and to move past all of the trauma is that all the bad things he did, I could have pointed the fingers that he's horrible, he's this, he's that. Yeah, oh, he's all those things. But I had to take time to look at myself and say, okay, Tamori, how did you end up in a relationship with someone and not know he was a drug addict? How did you not check out his past history to see what your future would be? So I took and put the onus on myself to be responsible, because I'm a pretty intelligent woman. How did you walk into this? And so it allowed me to look at him as opposed to my enemy, as someone who's struggling with demons and someone who didn't get the love and support that he should have as a child to become a productive, successful, loving man, but to continue becoming a shell of the vision that his family laid out for him, which is destructive. But I looked at me and I worked on me because I couldn't focus on him and I no longer wanted any aspect of him in my life. But I think it's important when you're on a journey to becoming someone new is that you have to see how you played a part in it. And when I was able to do that, I was able to free myself emotionally of any feelings for him, good or bad. I have no love, no hate. But to be able to just move forward in a way of saying, okay, but moving forward, how do we make sure we don't find this same type of person or find yourself in this type of situation again? And I didn't do woe is me or woe is him. I'm like, listen, you made a bad call, Tamori, figure it out. Now you got to move on and pick up the pieces, and that's what I did.
Well, and it's funny because our last court hearing, it's just been so ugly over the last 10 years. He just throws me in court every chance he gets. And I looked at him and I said, you know, I don't have any problems with you. It's been almost 10 years. Frankly, I wasn't a very good wife, so I'm not sure why you keep hanging on to this. And his new wife kind of looked at me and tilted her head, and I'm like, well, it's got to be really bad for you. You're the new wife, and all he does is talk about me. Like, there's an issue there. But I found out that there were things that I was just complacent with in that relationship just to keep peace. And when I left, I literally lost 45 pounds because I didn't have to be scared or living on eggshells all the time. And it was a physical metamorphosis when, you know, as time went on, my physical self, my emotional self, my spiritual self, I was able to be spiritual again. And I just shed weight, and I shed sadness, and I shed depression, and I shed people who were in my life that just repeated that kind of relationship. And the detachment was really hard at first, because I think you understand, you don't want to let go. You know, you always want to be the good guy. You always want to be the loving guy. But sometimes letting go of that is what makes you better and more loving, right? Talk to us about detaching from unhealthy relationships, because I know a lot of us maintain relationships with family, friends, and people that we love that are very toxic for us.
You know, I always say that, similar to you, the woman that he's with, the one that was committing adultery with him, what an honorable woman, I know she's living her own little hell because he's incapable of levels of human decency. And when I filed for divorce, he was trying to destroy me. I filed. I wanted out. I wanted to move on with my life. He was dragging me in and out of court, with status conferences. I wasn't objecting to the marriage. I filed the marriage. As a matter of fact, I didn't even want to see him in court because the last time I saw him, he was sweating and it was freezing in the courtroom, so it was obvious he was involved with drug usage. And the last time I went to court, he brought the woman to court with him. And I thought to myself, he's with the right woman because they both lack love of self, honor, integrity, and no moral compass. So they were with the right person. Those things helped me to be able to detach myself. I'm a very loyal person, and being married to me is extra levels of loyalty where you don't cheat on your spouse. You honor your spouse. So even when I, too, was in the house walking on eggshells, because if I said the sky was blue outside and he'd come out and rage, no, it's purple, and so to not have a fight, yeah, you know what, it is purple. So you
are you sure you didn't marry my ex-husband? Sounds like the same man, girl, I'm telling you.
Are similar, all of them.
Oh.
But it was important to be able to make sure that I completely detached myself. I no longer had anything to do with his family. Those weren't strong relationships anyway. But it's essential to be able to move forward, that relationships that are toxic, that are not pro-you, they become ex-relationships, whether they're friends. I don't care if it's your mother or your father. These relationships are not promoting you to be the best you that you can be. Then they are solely against you coming into your own as an individual, whether you are man, woman, or child. And when you're in a marriage with someone who's struggling from abuse, substance abuse, and mental illness, and definitely I believe there was levels of narcissism with him, absolutely, it can be hard because you're in the mindset that I want to help you. I want to fix you. But I learned that you cannot love those relations well, those relationships. You can't love someone sober. You can't love them recovered. You can't do any of those by way of emotional connection. It has to be something that they want. So for me to stay with him would have been just for me to be someone that he can use as a punching bag, maybe not literally, but definitely to take off his frustration and anxiety with and verbally or mentally abuse, because there wasn't a mutual love at all. I don't believe we got married based under the guise of love at all. I think it was based off of his need to keep his addiction going, and so who I think can help me stay in my level of addiction. There she goes. She wins the ticket. And fortunately, I won the ticket. So toxic relationships have to be cut off at the head. They have to be. They don't produce. They don't encourage you to grow. What could you do with them?
I think that it's really, I think that people like that are extremely attracted to people like us who are loyalists, who are honest, who are caring. We're caregivers. We love to make things better. And that whole narcissistic abuse is all about how much can I manipulate this person and how far can I get them to bend before they break? And that's a real hard pill to swallow. You know this as well as I do. It's hard to say, oh, shit, this is actually my fault because I chose to ignore this because I wanted to prove to him that love existed. And it's my mission in my head and in my heart to make everyone happy and to make everybody feel good because I want people to feel like I do. So I'm just going to ignore this behavior. I'm just going to pretend it doesn't exist. I'm going to, turn my head, make excuses, cancel family plans when he's off of his horse. and that's a huge pill to swallow. I mean, you really have to look honestly at yourself and the choices that you make. And what's even more frightening is most women, 86% of domestic violence victims actually go back to the relationship because he's so sorry and he won't do it again and he's going to get better and he's going to do better. And we fall for that. We're prey. We just fall right into the, okay, because of our own guilt and our own unwillingness to accept that this is truly an unhealthy relationship. What are the things that you find as you speak to women all over the world in regards to that owning of that piece that just keeps us tethered to them?
Absolutely. I think one of the first things that I always tell women, and I've spoken to a few men who are at a couple of the domestic women's addresses, that he or she was this way way before you met them. They were, all of these things that they are now has nothing to do with you. My ex-husband was a drug addict before I married him. He had bipolar disorder and schizophrenia before I married him. I found out later he was living off the street. He'd eaten out of garbage cans. He was all of these things before I married him. So why would I think that I could come along and change something that I don't even know when it started, how it started? I had no hand in it starting. It's presumptuous of us as individuals to think that you're going to come in and heal someone who has lived a life of disorder and dysfunction for multiple years. It really is presumptuous of you. And so I try to encourage them to work on you. You can't do anything for that person. They might need medication to get their imbalance back on track. All you can do is direct them to where they can go and hope they get it. But the only thing you can do when you are an individual dealing with any form of domestic violence, and domestic violence doesn't have to be just about him hitting you or her hitting you. It can be talking down to you. It could be threatening you. Verbal, mental abuse, those are all a part of the umbrella called domestic violence. And you don't need him to come along and give you a phony apology because he knows that's what your soul craves. What you need to do is get you right and figure out, how do I get me emotionally back on track? How did I get to this place where I allowed someone to come in and disrupt my life with family histrionics from a while ago? Because my ex-husband came from abuse. He came from drug addiction. That's what he saw going on as a kid. So he didn't know how to love me. He had not been shown love. He didn't know how to disseminate love. Where would he have gotten it from? But had I vetted him better, and I'm not blaming his conduct on me, I'm only blaming my actions on me. Had I done my due diligence better, I would not have married him. So when you get to that place where you know you need tweaking and you got to get you back on track, it has nothing to do with the abuser, nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with how you allowed it, how do you prevent it and make sure it doesn't happen again, and how do you love yourself enough to see it when it's in your face so that you can put on your Nikes and run the other way.
Oh, hell yeah, girl. Zoom, zoom, I'm out. It's you know, I don't know about you, but even afterwards, it's been really, really hard to date because I feel like I have to spend extra time vetting people. And then one little thing, that whole trauma is relived in my body, and I'm just like, whoop, I'm out, got to go, run. So it's like the runaway bride syndrome almost.
But it's good because that's the sensors in your brain saying, all right, there's a problem here, there's a problem here, look at this.
Right.
And some of it may be overkill, but I'd rather have overkill than to go back through the foolishness that I dealt with. And as you stated about your ex, being drugged in and out of court because the intention is, I want to break her. I want to destroy her. I hate her. I want to make sure she has nothing. I want to... all of that energy that he spent into trying to hate me, that really didn't have the effect. I tell people all the time that he bent me. I'll tell you that because I'm a strong person. He bent me, but he didn't have the capacity to break me. And I think that's what bothers him, to where if he got someone who's easily bendable, breakable, all those things, and I'm sure that's getting old. But he couldn't do that with me. And so it's like unfinished business, but the intent from someone who doesn't feel good about themselves, someone who doesn't love themselves, they're not looking to lift you up. They're looking to make you feel as bad as they feel. They're looking to punch you enough so you look as bad as they feel. So it's important that we spend time, and I tell people therapy, 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 therapy. My therapist didn't tell me what to do, but he helped me get myself back on track and point out things in myself that might have gotten me to this place. And so I look at that.
Absolutely.
What was the strategy to move forward?
Absolutely. All right, so we're going to do a head turn. We're going to sashay to the left, girl. We have hardly any time left. This show goes by so fast, and it blows my mind because there's so many amazing people that share their story and inspire other people. So I'm grateful for your time. In that, I would like you to tell everybody where they can reach you, and then we're going to do a sashay to the left and talk about some positive stuff.
Absolutely. Definitely, I have some speaking events that are coming up. I'm kind of waiting for some changes as we have the whole coronavirus situation going on and in California. We're under shelter in place. But my website is going to be the best place, and my Facebook page, T. Leanne Speaking Pros, LLC, as well as www.TLEANNESPEAKS.com. And there's an events tab, and you can see what's coming up. Again, kind of maneuver with me as, you know, so many things are changing for the social distancing that we're required to do. But check me out. It has all my contact information on my website. And if you're looking for someone to speak or train individuals at your small business or personal coaching, give me a call. I'm available always.
All right. So, like I said, we're going to sashay to the left. And I want to talk about some of the fun things that we can be doing while we're in this kind of isolation, pandemic, eggshell walking thing. I really want to get people to turn off their television, stop listening to the red brick, and find positive, happy, inspirational places to be within themselves, even if they do it 5 minutes a day. You know, mental, emotional, spiritual exercising. Give us some tips and tricks. Like, what kind of crazy fun things are you doing in your stay-at-home isolation?
Well, I don't know if they're crazy and fun, but I'll tell you certainly what we're doing. Since all of our schools are closed down here until May, I conduct school at my house from 10 to 2. I have a 13-year-old and a 14-year-old son, 13-year-old daughter. And so from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., I have a schedule in place that includes breaks, PE, lunchtime, and so they're doing their regular schoolwork to keep them on track. And in the morning while they're doing that, I usually go for long walks. We have a park that I do a lot of long walks at and just kind of free my mind, think of things that I have going on. Board games. It's given us an opportunity to spend more time together. I have a theater room so we can watch movies. And kind of since they're encouraging that we really stay in, we try to figure out a lot of things to do at home. But it allows us a lot more time to talk to each other, have a little bit more one-on-one time. Board games, you get to really see who's a poor sport, and it is my son. And so you really get connected, especially if you have teenagers. But we spend a lot more time together, and we already did. But we do outside, a little bit of outside exercising, and turn off the news. The news is, oh, my gosh, it'll keep you in a place of despair if that's all you're watching.
Yep.
Turn off TV.
Absolutely. That's my biggest pet peeve, and I've been saying that for years. Turn off the damn television. Like, throw on some tunes. Dance around your house naked. Take a bubble bath. Drink some wine. Tell dirty jokes. Play, you know, play cards. Read a book. Recite poetry. You know, stick your finger out of your window to your mean neighbor. You know, throw toilet paper. Don't say that you don't have any. Everybody's hoarded it. Throw toilet paper on your tree. Just live a little bit, for Christ's sakes. Isn't this pandemic enough of a warning to all of us how fragile and precious we are as individuals on this planet? But mostly be kind. Be kind to other people.
Definitely. Absolutely. And I think that if nothing else, I've found people on just in mere Facebook communications that are, you know, have the symptoms of this, this, that, and the other, and I always message all of them, how can I help you? What do you need that I can help you with? If you need food, if you tell me how I can help you, because we all really should be in a service to each other. And if we're not trying to help the next person, then we're really missing out on the opportunity to be the best human being that we can be. So I have neighbors, some are older. I text them to see if they need anything. I'm going to the store. Do you need me to pick up anything? We check on each other. Service, service, service is what we are expected to do for each other. And if we're not, then we should ask ourselves some questions.
Some serious questions. I'm embarrassed by a lot of humans on this planet who have acted so harsh and irrational and mean and me. It just shows a level of humanity that I never wanted to bear witness to. But by the grace of God, it encourages me to be spiteful towards them. and encourage the light and encourage the love and encourage the support. And when I go and get gas or I go to the grocery store to get supplies, I'm nice to my cashier. I'm nice to the person that's bagging my groceries. These people are working overtime and they're exhausted and they're putting their lives on the front line for you. So don't be greedy. Don't be rude. Shut up. And if you're going to be nasty, stay at home and eat your pork and beans because everybody's got a can somewhere.
That's right.
Lord. Any other last-minute things that you would like to share with everybody here at Living and Thriving? Love, possibilities, excitement, motivation, creativity?
I will be coming out with my first novel, my second book, and it's going to be entitled Trusting Someone Else's Heart. Check on my website for that. It should be out within the next couple of months. It should have been out in January, but it kind of goes deeper into my story, but it's not a consistent autobiography. It's encouraging words for individuals to, if you're going through something like this, how to get out of it, how to move your life in a more productive way. So that'll be coming out probably within the next 60 days, Trusting Someone Else's Heart. So look to that. Look forward to that.
Yay. All right. So trust my heart. What kinds of things could I do that you're outlining in this book? We've got like 4 minutes left to the show, so I want to make sure we highlight some of that and get people excited so they go out and get it, because we're all kind of at home and reading is good for your brain.
I stress the importance of boundaries, mutually beneficial boundaries for you and your partner to make sure that you guys are respecting each other at all times, making sure you're taking care of yourself. Putting your kids first. I had 2 children when I was going through all of this. And what example you're setting for them, what are you saying to your daughters who are watching this? What are you telling your son as to how he should treat women? And it's encouraging. I don't want anyone feeling sorry or sad. That's not the intent. It's to uplift you. And if you haven't gone through anything like this, thank your lucky stars.
Right? Amen. Amen.
Yeah, so it'll be a good read, definitely.
So you think about 60 days, or because you're on lockdown, it might be sooner?
It might
you
be
got a lot of time, girl.
Exactly. It could be soon, but definitely no longer than 60 days. So.
So one of the things that I want to just kind of throw out there, in lieu of our certain, you know, our circumstance, are you doing any kind of like online coaching, Zoom kind of thing? So are you doing anything like that for people to check out?
You know what? I actually am working on a website. A large company actually hired me to put together a public speaking website. Not website, I apologize.
Nice.
A public course. So I am working on that right now. It should be done in about 30 days. When it is complete, they'll have access to it on the website. And also my book, 10 Steps to Becoming a Highly Effective Public Speaker, is also available through my website as well. But I'm super excited about this course. They're going to be teaching it throughout the company. I'm so privileged that they picked me as one of the individuals that they thought could really make a difference and, kind of take the message to the next level. So definitely. That's why I'm so happy about that. So I can't wait for that to be launched, definitely.
Yay. Well, I am so grateful that you took some time out of your busy day to spend it with us. And I'm grateful for your messaging and all the hard work that you do. Don't be a stranger. Know that you have people over here that love you and think you're amazing. And keep in touch.
I will definitely.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and I'm Rusty. And guess what? I just talked to Tamara. She is a certified presenter and speaker for NAMI, National Alliance of Mental Health. She's a writer. She's a mom. She's a cool chick. She's got a lot to share. And you should go to her website and check it out. I love what I do. It inspires me every single day. And I get to do it with you, which makes it even cooler because we get to go on this adventure together and learn and live and thrive and become better versions of ourselves and realize that, you know what, we're pretty cool. Yeah, we got flaws, but hey, everybody else does too. We're in the right club. Know that you're beautiful. Know that I love you. And know that being kind is what we need right now. So do something nice. Go have a water pistol fight. Stay 6 feet away. Fill up water balloons. Take a tubby. Eat chocolate. Do something fun. Live, please. Live and love and be kind.
Living and vibing with Rusty.